Welcome to the weekly Dharma Talk podcast from the Columbus Karmateksum Choling Buddhist Meditation Center. This week's Dharma Talk is entitled The Song of the Wild Asses by Lama Tom Broadwater. Milarepa, beloved 12th century Tibetan saint, had a difficult student to teach, Rechumpa. We will tell their story. We will see how Milarepa skillfully taught this prideful student. After Rechumpa repented of his pride, Milarepa rewarded him and gave this student beautiful instructions to follow. At the conclusion of this talk, we will look at those beautiful instructions and begin to see the necessity of following a teacher. If you like our Dharma Talk series, please consider donating to Columbus Karmateksum Choling at columbusktc.org. Enjoy the podcast.
My name is Tom Broadwater. I'm an assistant resident lama at Columbus KTC. And this is the 11:30 Dharma Talk. I'm very happy to be here with you this morning. I hope what I have to say will be helpful to you today. But in any case, welcome. And I'm glad to be here with you. In response to the tragic invasion of Ukraine, Dzogchen Khuntral Rinpoche recommends that we recite the refuge prayer of Tongtong Galpo. So let's pray that the loss of life is minimized on all sides. That's what Dzogchen Khuntral Rinpoche is praying for. And for the safety and health and well-being of all who are impacted by this crisis. That the Russian forces be pacified and that the situation does not spin out of control into a larger conflict. And hopefully this situation will quickly resolve and lasting peace and stability can come to that region. You may not know this prayer, that's no big deal. Just listen and aspire to be a peacemaker. I and all mother sentient beings equal to space take refuge in the Guru, who is the precious Buddha. We take refuge in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the assemblies of the Sangha. We take refuge in the assembly of Lama, Yidam, and Dakini. We take refuge in our own mind, which is luminous, empty, Dharmakaya. I take refuge in the Guru, who is a precious Buddha. We take refuge in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the assembly of the Sangha. Lama Yidam Khandro, we take refuge. We take refuge in our own mind, which is luminous, empty Dharmakaya. I and all the mother sentient beings equal to space take refuge in the Guru, who is the precious Buddha. We take refuge in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the assemblies of the Sangha. We take refuge in the assembly of the Lama, Yidam, and Dakini. We take refuge in our own mind, which is luminous, empty Dharmakaya. So today's talk is about the Song of the Wild Asses. It's a story about Milarepa and his student, Rechumpa. The stories come from the Thousand Songs of Milarepa. So let's start by giving a little background to the story. Let's first talk a little bit about Milarepa. Milarepa was a 12th century Tibetan Buddhist saint and yogi. So he was remarkably reflective, a mystical person. The exact date of his birth is disputed, so I think there are at least two different dates. His picture is behind me in this tanka that I have. His early story is about his making amends for the revenge deaths he caused in his immediate family. In remorse, Milarepa sought and found a teacher, Marpa, the translator, who guided him to enlightened life. There are so many wonderful lessons in Milarepa's story. I will mention two. The first is his story cuts through the nonsense we project on our teachers. The point is that every teacher, every great teacher, was once a student. We don't always know the difficulties that they've struggled with, but every teacher has a human story. Milarepa teaches us something else too. He teaches us that no matter how messed up our lives have been or are, we are always worthy to be acceptable students. But Milarepa tells us that no matter how messed up our lives are, no matter how much we've misbehaved, it is still possible to practice Dharma and achieve liberation. Dharma practice is not for special people, a special few people. It's not just for the rich, the famous, or the saintly. The fact is, Tibet's greatest saint began his journey as a murderer, a mass murderer. We'll never be able to duplicate the diligence of Milarepa's efforts. But from whatever point we are starting, we can be inspired by Milarepa's life. And certainly if we preserve on the path, our journey will appear to us as heroic as his was. For sure, on the path, we'll need Milarepa's discipline. Milarepa lived his life without a lot of religious trappings, and we'll need that simplicity to uncomplicate our own lives. Milarepa lived his simple lifestyle without seeking, while seeking refuge in mountain caves, where he is known to meditate for months on and on. His life provided inspiration to that Buddhist renaissance that was occurring at his time. And it continues to inspire us to this very day. We know that Milarepa's life was legendary. And in particular, he is known for his songs of realization called Dohas, recorded in the 100,000 songs of Milarepa. He was also adept at pointing out the enlightened mind. Despite, or maybe because of his simple life, he attracted lots of followers. There were two in particular, Lord of Dharma Gompopa and Rechumpa. The stories that I'm going to recount today are about Rechumpa and Milarepa. Rechumpa was a disciple and student of Milarepa from a very young age. When they were together, they were called father and son. When Milarepa met Rechumpa, the boy was an expert at reciting scripture. So much so that his parents tried to make an income out of his performative recitations of Dharma. Milarepa recognized Rechumpa's talent and took him on as a student and adopted son. It appears when you read the stories of the 100,000 songs that Rechumpa became sort of like an administrative assistant for Milarepa. he set up interviews for Milarepa. Wachumpa was said to have been a handsome man as he grew into adulthood. And maybe as a consequence of this, he was filled with a lot of self-pride. But even so, he retained an elemental devotion to Milarepa throughout all these stories that I'm going to tell. This residual devotion may have saved his spiritual life. This might be important to keep in mind as we go along here. As we will see, at a critical point, Wachumpa had to choose between his self-pride and his arrogance and his devotion and love to his realized teacher. The point to make here is that Wachumpa's pride, even though he was an advanced practitioner, he was as ordinary as you and me. And so the story can strike some chords within our own heart. Now, before I tell you the story about the wild asses, and to provide you with some context and continuity, I'm going to go back to a story I told you last month, which was the yak horn story, which is also in the 100,000 Psalms. This time, I wanted to tell the story with a slightly different twist. This time, I want you to see if you can put yourself into Milarepa's struggle. See, Milarepa is not like the villain of this story. He's every man. He is you and me. So if you can, try to see yourself in what he did and what he was. So let's recall the yak horn story. So on the instructions of his teacher, Milarepa, Wachumpa went to India from Tibet to gain some Dharma teachings and texts. Now, a round trip from Tibet to India would probably be round trip 900 miles. And Wachumpa took two trips, so he traveled probably 2,000 miles. And keep in mind that he wouldn't have had a car, a bus, or a plane to go on. He either walked or rode a pack animal all those miles. So it was a really difficult journey. And the texts that Wachumpa brought back and the teachings he received in India were profound. All these things, his epic trip, the precious texts, and the profound learning that he gained, had one major effect on Wachumpa. His pride increased, and a lot. Pride shows itself in a lot of ways, but most clearly in an inability to surrender to spiritual authority. So as he approached his teacher on his return to Tibet, Wachumpa was thinking to himself, "I am more learned in scriptures and logic than my teacher. When Milarepa greets me, will he prostrate to me?" Of course, Milarepa would not prostrate to Wachumpa. In fact, Milarepa thought Wachumpa was so proud that maybe demons possessed him. And this upset Wachumpa, to say the least. It more like immobilized him with resentment. After this poor greeting and return to Tibet, much of the rest of the story is taken up by Wachumpa's continued effort to seek his teacher's praise for his accomplishments. He went on and on about all the great teachers he had met and taught him. He talked about the hardships he endured that were heroic, but he wanted praise for it. And he wanted to turn these things into fame and recognition. And so Wachumpa said to Milarepa, "Please invest me with the due praise and honor I deserve." Of course, Milarepa ignored Wachumpa's pleas. He saw Milarepa's pride and wouldn't reinforce it. So let's stop here for just a minute and see how this might apply to our own stories, our own lives. We we acquire a few skills in meditation. And sometimes we want people to know about it. We may leave subtle or not so subtle hints about what we've learned in meditation. When we go to our teachers, we don't want instructions, but we want lots of praise. Or we may go to our friends, our coworkers, our relatives, and whip on a few Dharma terms for them. We don't do this out of compassion to teach the Dharma or the love of the Dharma, but because of our neurotic need to be uniquely identified and recognized and praised for our Dharma practice. I've seen this, and it's corrupt, and it leads to disappointment and very little good. One of the greatest barriers to authentic practice is our pride. Rechampa reminds us that this obstacle of pride is and the self-clinging exists not only in the beginner, but in the veteran practitioner, even at the highest level. Rechampa, by the way, was not a newbie. In response to all of Rechampa's pride and resentment, Milarepa said, "I have no wish to be learning. I have no text. I have no great pride, nor flaunt my speech. I'm happy." And he repeats this over and over again. "I'm happy." Without any arrogance or desire for fame, gossip and slander are no more. And so I'm happy. At any time, I'm happy. Pride can motivate us to acquire knowledge and books at the expense of practice. Pride teaches us to be eloquent, which without experience is just a bunch of blah, blah, blah. Pretty on the outside, empty on the inside. Pride frames everything in competitive terms, ridiculing and gossiping about lesser people that we think are lesser than ourselves, and resentfully slandering our superiors, people that are more experienced than ourselves. Milarepa wanted nothing to do with pride. At this point, seeing he wasn't getting through to Rechampa, Milarepa makes an even greater effort to convince Rechampa that Milarepa's simple lifestyle was far more conducive to the Dharma than Rechampa's arrogance and wish for comfort. The story is recounted in the 100,000 Songs is that Milarepa entered a yakhorn without himself changing in size and the yakhorn not increasing in size. Milarepa then said, "Rechampa, if the Son is equal to the Father, come inside this yakhorn." Rechampa tried to enter the yakhorn and failed. A hailstorm developed while this was going on. So what was Rechampa's response to what appeared to be a miraculous event? He said, "My father's power may be greater than mine, or it may not be. But I know the hail is real." So let's look at this incident a little bit more and try to understand it. Is this episode simply a folklore fantasy created by one of Milarepa's followers to dupe gullible followers in the future? Many people would say that. It's a mythical story around a saint. But to understand the story and all the stories in the 100,000 Songs, you have to appreciate something about Tibetan Buddhist experience and Vajrayana practice in particular. But I can only speak about my own experiences, what I know of. So let me tell you some of my experiences. So for some summers before my 3-year retreat and after, I spent 10 days each summer with students of Kimpo Karcher Rinpoche at our home monastery in Woodstock, New York. The stories that some could tell about their teacher, Kempo Carter Rinpoche, during these retreats might have elements that we would find in 100,000 Songs of Milarepa. Sometimes during the summer retreats, Rinpoche gave empowerments. Often, this would involve Rinpoche using words to create Buddha fields, realms where Buddhas dwell, places of transcendent beauty and wisdom. To say that the pictures Rinpoche created were simply in the mind's eye does not in any means, by any means, capture the vivid experiential nature of what was happening in many students' minds. The experience was so vivid that it was transformative for many people. At the same time, it wasn't an otherworldly experience. Rather, for many, it was the sense of the true ephemeral nature of reality, and that was enhanced. You have to understand the view and outlook of Vajrayana practice and experience. So what are the conditions that create these vivid and transforming experiences? First, on the one side, you must have an experienced, realized master who is able to transmit his experiences to others. And secondly, you have to have people who have a devotion to the realized master and the lineage of transmission from which he teaches. All of this is required, and missing any part, there will be no experience for the student. During these same summers, Rinpoche taught on the very highest teachings of the lineage on the nature of mind. As a result, some students experienced glimpses of the beauty and the majesty of mind. This is not a fantasy. This was the experience of many. But let's be clear, to most outsiders, nothing would be observed or experienced. Although there have been those on the outside who would get a sense of wonderment and awe around Rinpoche. So here are some thoughts. What occurs in Vajrayana practice is about what's happening in the mind, and in some cases, between the mind of the teacher and the student. So it's really all about mind. So let's go back to Rinpoche's response to the Yakhorn story. Remember his response to the images that the teacher projected was, "Teacher, your power may or may not be real, but I know the hailstorm is real." Certainly a very tentative and ambivalent response. He is saying the spiritual words of his teacher may or may not reflect the truth, but he thinks that hail striking him truly is. His teacher's power may be real or it may not be real, but he knows the hailstorm is definitely real. He's more concerned about being discomforted by the hail than experiencing what is going on in the teacher's mind. He had some devotion to Milarepa as a result of being with him from a young age. So he sees his teacher in the Yakhorn, but he does not have enough faith and devotion to enter the Yakhorn and to be there with his teacher. In the short Vajrayana lineage prayer, which we said before each teaching session during our summer retreats, we prayed, "Devotion is the head of meditation as is taught. As ones who pray to the Lama who opens the gate to the treasury of the oral instructions, please bless us to develop genuine devotion, to enter the Yakhorn." Rinpoche would need to develop an open, clear, and confident mind, willing to submit to his teacher's projection. Pride narrows the gate. The mind of Rechampa, through which Milarepa's visionary experience would enter, was far too narrowed by his own self-importance. This is a lesson for every practitioner, but most especially for the Vajrayana practitioner, beginner or veteran. Devotion becomes increasingly important as we move along. I'm not going to go into the rest of the story of the Yakhorn, except to point out that throughout the story, Milarepa is asking Rechampa to follow him into mountain caves to meditate with him. This is to be a remedy to all of his pride and wanting comfort. But Rechampa resists. And he gives himself away in one very telling passage. Rechampa says, "I spent time in India and learned all these teachings of secret mantra. Attaining enlightenment through austerities, it's just not something I want to do." Instead, he felt he had paid his dues, and as a result, he was entitled to desirable things. But at each level of practice, renunciation becomes increasingly more important. In that same prayer that I recited earlier, we pray further. Detachment or renunciation is a foot of meditation, as is taught. As ones with no craving for food or wealth, who cuts through the ties of this life, please bless us to have no attachment to honor or gain. So Rechampa wasn't having anything to do with mountain caves. Now I'm thinking of Kempo Karta Rinpoche. He was the object of extraordinary generosity from his students and donors. But how did he live? He lived in a llama house outside of Delhi, New York, down a dusty old country road. The house he lived in, he shared with others. And on special occasions, there were as many as 40 or 50 people congregating in and around his house. In that house, he had one room with a bathroom. He ate simple vegan diet. And he's really an example of a great meditation teacher, in part because he led a very simple life, detached from some of the desirable things that Rechampa craved. So we end this account of the Yakhorn. Now we take up the story of the Song of the Wild Asses. I can't retell the entire story word for word, so there's going to be some deletions. If there are things I leave out that I shouldn't have, my apologies ahead of the account. So far in the yak story, that Yakhorn story, Milarepa is trying to bring Rechampa out of his trance of self-importance, and so far he's having it successful. So Milarepa takes his students to a place called Poto. And in typical fashion, his oppositional student wants to take a detour to meet with benefactors. The text says Rechampa grudgingly conceded to his teacher and went with him to Poto. While making camp for the night, Milarepa tells Rechampa to get some water from a close by river. And Milarepa makes a fire. After fetching the water, Rechampa comes across a wild ass. In Tibetan, it's called a kyung. And that wild ass was giving birth. These animals are sort of chestnut brown animals. They're about 4 foot tall with long tails. They're really beautiful animals. Well, anyway, Rechampa became enthralled by the picture of this wild ass giving birth, and it became a even more miraculous affair when it kept repeating. More and more births were being given by the kungs that were birthed in the first place. So it was just a miraculous kind of situation going on there. And it was really a magical display emanating from Milarepa's mind. So meanwhile, back at the camp, Milarepa seized all of the texts Rechampa had brought from India and burnt all but a few. Returning to camp, Rechampa sees his texts in the fire. When asked why he burnt all these texts, Milarepa said, "Thinking you were dead, I had no use for the texts. They would be just a distraction from virtuous activity. So I burn them all. They're useless texts." The song says that Rechampa at that point lost faith in Milarepa, and he projected onto his teacher what was in his own heart. He thought that Milarepa acted out of anger. In fact, we are told in the story that Milarepa acted out of compassion. So Rechampa thought about returning to India and ending his relationship with his father teacher. He then became even more angry and more arrogant and showed his lack of faith in his teacher. Milarepa reprimanded his student by saying, "This is your own fault. You got distracted by the display of wild asses." And then Milarepa said, "If you want to see a real show, I'll show you one." Then on the crown of Milarepa's head appeared a throne where Milarepa's teacher, Marpa, sat. And on either side of Milarepa's eyes and ears, a sun and moon appeared. His whole person emanated light. Milarepa then sang a song, "Rechampa, if you want to know how to look with the eye of faith, all the blessings you desire will fall like rain." If anything is wondrous, this display of mind is wondrous. Though the show of the wild asses was great, they were only animals. Then he sang, "If you know how to look with the eye of respect, all Dharma will dawn as your own speech." What was Rechampa's response? He sat in resentment. He stomped around crying, "Give me back my texts." Then sort of like pulling out all stops, Milarepa displayed the chakras and the deities residing there in his subtle body. Chakras are, they mean the wheel. That's the literal meaning of it. And in Vajrayana context, it refers to the energy centers which occur at the junction of the nadis, which are like tubular organs of the subtle body. And through those organs, energy flows. I am not qualified to teach about chakras. I'm just describing what the story says. Anyway, Milarepa's pulling out all the stops here. And what was Rechampa's response to this magical display? Rechampa said, "All this haphazard behavior is not impressive to me. Give me back my text. If you perform the miracle of restoring my text, then you will make me have faith again. Otherwise, I'm not impressed." So even after showing him all of these aspirations, aside from watching them, Rechampa still had no desire to arouse his faith. And Milarepa sang, "Faithless disciples of this polluted age, When I think of them, this yogi is sad. There is no bending a hardened heart. Rechampa, bend your mind from within. So let's pause the story to think about what's going on here. Perhaps the thing that stands out for me the most is that Milarepa burnt these texts. They were sacred. And we learn that we are to reverence the texts. We don't step over them and we make offerings to them. So the first thing to note is that Milarepa is an enlightened being. What he can do, we can't. The song states that he acted out of compassion. He saw that Rechampa's grasping on the text was increasing his own suffering. And if Rechampa tried to use them, it would be with a selfish motivation, with little long-term benefit for him or others. This burning of the text also shows that Milarepa's highest pastoral concern was the welfare of his student. He didn't want his student to use these texts for selfish reasons, because they had become a religious trapping, and Milarepa wanted nothing to do with religious trappings. Recently, I had the opportunity to talk to Kenpo Urgyen at KTD, and I asked him about what topics I should teach on. And I was sort of surprised at his response. He never gave me an answer as to what topics I should teach on. Instead, he surprised me by saying that whatever I taught, if I had a good motivation in my teaching, that would benefit others. Conversely, I think he was saying that even if I spoke on the most profound topic, if I did it out of pride or with a competitive spirit, there would be absolutely no benefit. So Milarepa knew that Rechampa's arrogance would not benefit others so long as he used the text to support his own arrogance. The same applies, in fact, to students listening to the Dharma. If our motivation is to collect teachings to increase our pride, to impress our family, our coworkers, or our friends, little good will be accomplished in our listening. The other thing to note here is that for the student-teacher relationship to be effective, the teacher has to be open and compassionate, and the student has to be open and devoted. Milarepa showed his openness by never giving up on Rechampa. At the same time, he never demanded blind obedience to his religious authority. There was no religious authoritarianism in Milarepa's approach. He kept trying different ways to bring his student around. When meeting Rechampa's hardened heart, Milarepa would sing to him, not the usual doctrinaire approach of religious authority. But no matter how much even an enlightened being may try to help, if the heart is hardened, no transmission can transpire. So it's not only the teacher's mind, but also it's in the mind of the student. There is interdependence in the student-teacher relationship. If the student refuses to be student, the teacher cannot be teacher, no matter how great the teacher is or how realized he may be. So we can further wonder what were the causes surrounding the impasse between Milarepa and Rechampa. Certainly it was pride, but there might be something more to it. After all, Rechampa and Milarepa were called father and son. This relationship was established when Rechampa was a child. Perhaps it is this very circumstance that conditioned Rechumpa's actions. After all, children often seek the approval of their fathers. So Rechumpa hoped his father would bow to him. Sometimes in our separating and becoming independent of our parents, we compete with our parents. Or perhaps it was Rechumpa's familiarity. His long-term closeness to Milarepa that bred an unhealthy, casual disregard for his teacher's words. I don't know. What I do know is that we can project onto our teacher all kinds of things, especially if they fail to conform to what we think they should say or do. So we need to watch out for those projections in difficult times. The other thought I have is that the teacher is not our drinking buddy. He's not our neighbor with whom we can gossip. He's not a casual friend. The teacher's job is to move the student along the path of liberation. And the student's job is to move along that same path to liberation using the teacher as a guide. So let's go back to the story again. We left off with Milarepa lamenting the faithlessness of the present day student. In one last song to Rechumpa, Milarepa says, "Leave your bad attitude in high regard. Dispel your mind stream's negative perceptions. Let rest all your negative conduct's airs. Look at your mind stream's coarse way of thinking. Leave behind your wrong views. Abandon the demon fiend of self-grasping. At death, I will have no testament than that. And in life, I have no heart advice but that. Hold this within your mind stream, Rechumpa." Having sang that song, Milarepa appeared to Rechumpa to ascend into the sky to a heavenly realm. Seeing his teacher disappear, Rechumpa felt remorse and said, "Since my mind was not tamed, I wouldn't let go of my measly text. Then the guru showed me all these miracles, and still faith did not arise. What use are the texts without a guru?" So when Milarepa appeared to disappear into the sky, Rechumpa threw himself off a cliff and showed remorse while thinking that in all my future births, may this mind mix with the mind of my guru. Landing on the ground with his body broken, Rechumpa saw his teacher's shadow fly over him in the sky. Then running after the shadow, Rechumpa arrived at a place called Red Rock. Emanating in three separate forms in front of Rechumpa, Milarepa said, "If you've given rise to faith, speak the truth in your heart." Rechumpa replies, "You cared for me with compassion. This is the truth in my heart." And then Milarepa added, "I sent you to gather instructions, but so much of this was mere talk. I feared you would become someone who just talks about scripture." We know from the story that Rechumpa was a student of Milarepa from childhood. We can imagine he has shown his father respect during that time. Otherwise, had he not, this story could have had a far different narrative and ending. But at this point, the text that he carried with him from India fell into Rechumpa's hands because he showed remorse and confessed to his guru. And it says that from then on, Rechumpa never separated from the view that his guru was the Buddha in person. Rechampa said, "Previously, I have paid respect and service to my guru, but still need to do more, and that's for certain." He did. And this text further says, he made the promise to do so, which he carried out fully. At different points in the story, Rechampa was losing it, you might say. Anger, pride, and privilege blinded him with its raging fire and heat. Perceived slights by his teacher and father were felt as intensely as any physical assault. Under these circumstances, the heart becomes hardened and mindlessly reckless. This all happened to Rechampa, and it could happen to you or me. But he was fortunate because under the surface was a residual respect and love for his teacher. It is because of that respect that his teacher was able, through persistent and skillful effort, to bring him back to a natural state of devotion. Now, before we conclude this story, I want to make one last comment. The cautionary aspect of this story is that you and I are fledglings in Dharma. Rechampa was a veteran. He lived and breathed Dharma, and yet he struggled. So the point is, we will always need to be checking our motivation at whatever level we practice. There's always the possibility that we become jaded or prideful. In fact, for some, the possibility of pride actually increases as they move along. We all need to check our motivation when listening to the Dharma and relating to our teachers. Now let's conclude the story. Since Rechampa was ready, Milarepa did what only a guru can do with perfection. He gave a wonderful Mahamudra meditation instruction in the form of a song, and it is often called the View, Meditation, Conduct, and Fruition. I won't read the whole song, just the first stanza. And it says, the view is wisdom, which is empty. The meditation is luminosity free of fixation. The conduct is continual stream of non-attachment. The fruition is nakedness free of stains. Again, I won't go into the other stanzas. They're just too profound of a text for me to talk about. But according to Kempo Sutram Kamsa, the outlook or view we cultivate that's mentioned in this stanza is that wisdom is empty of everything that obscures it. In this case of Rechampa, it is his pride and attachment that was obscuring his wisdom. Finally, having purified these afflictive states through his confession of faults to his guru, he got closer to wisdom mind. Meditation is becoming familiar with an awareness, a luminosity that is free from fixation. In the case of Rechampa, he was fixated on the text and the fame they would bring him. Once freed from this fixation, he could see more clearly, more luminously, that wisdom state. This conduct spoken of in this stanza could best be seen in the conduct of Milarepa. His was a continual stream of non-attachment. He was being challenged by a lifelong student, but instead of becoming fixated on his identity as a father or teacher and getting angry at his student and his student's arrogance, Milarepa's actions spontaneously flowed from his realization. That's to say, his compassion. The last line about nakedness refers to the nature of mind just as it is. And Carl Brunholz, a great teacher, says about this nakedness. We dress up our minds in the costumes of anger, attachment, pride, and jealousy. When these costumes are stripped away, the basic awareness that is mind's nature is naked without any additives, preservatives, or artificial flavors, without a fig leaf of embarrassment. The happy ending here is that finally, Rechampa cooperated with his guru to strip away his pride and his attachment. And as a result of preserving in that struggle, his teacher was able to give him pointing out instructions and lead him to the nature of his mind, his Buddha nature. And so we pray in that same Vajradhara prayer that I have referred to and that began every teaching at KDD, our home monastery. And it goes like this. The main practice is being undistracted, as is taught, as ones who, when whatever arises, rest simply, not altering, ingest that fresh thought, bless us in the practice that's free from thoughts. And finally, in all our births, may we never be separate from the perfect Guru. Enjoying Dharma's splendor, perfecting the qualities of the path and levels, may we quickly achieve the state of Buddha Vajradhara. And so that's my wish for you and for me, that we never separate from the perfect Guru, that we enjoy the splendor of the Dharma, and that we perfect all the qualities of the path and attain all the levels, and that we quickly achieve the state of Buddha Vajradhara. Thank you very much for listening to me today. Bless you during the week. And safe travels wherever you may go. Thank you. And good day.
Thank you for joining us for this week's Dharma Talk. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you did, please subscribe, rate, and review it on iTunes. To learn more about the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling or to donate to support our Dharma Talk series, please visit our website at columbusktc.org. The opening and closing music for the podcast is Tibetan Flute Song by Tamding Arts at tamdingarts.com. Please join us again next week for another Dharma Talk.